Welcome to Heartland Darkland. I'm Cassie.
And I'm Shannon.
Hey, Darkhearts.
Hey, Darkhearts.
Welcome.
Here we go.
Patrons, I hope you enjoyed our little ditty at the beginning.
I was trying to think. There's this movie I just watched where they're doing like an acting, like an exercise, and it's like, what is it? The teeth in the... the teeth in the tongue, the tip in the nose, the teeth in the tongue, the tip in the nose. And like they do that beforehand. And I was like, that's so random, but I just was going to say that in the beginning and I didn't. So maybe I'll add that for the patrons next time.
There you go.
But everyone else got to hear it right now. So
yeah, I mean, there you go.
Yeah.
Speaking of patrons, if you join, you get to listen to this episode usually a day early. Last week, it was only a few hours earlier. But you still got it earlier. We appreciate you guys, though. And if you join at our $5 tier, you get stickers. Oh, my goodness. This is the new month. We have to do our shout out, too.
It is. Oh, it is. Happy March.
It is. So you get stickers. You get a shout out. And if you're in our second tier, you will also get a quarterly gift, which for those of you who have it... Hey, we're on that. We got that. Yeah. And also we've got stickers ordered now. We've got all the things.
Yeah.
We got all the things going right now, you guys. So
it's super exciting.
Yeah, we're getting really excited. I'm really excited for the thing in Grand Island.
Yes.
Coming up. So that's also very exciting.
Yeah. Cassie found some cool merch stuff. Yeah. For the gifts. And we're like,
and speaking of merch, you guys, we are working on setting up a site where you can order stuff. Like, so we just need to set up, actually, we need to make some things. Ooh, what do you call it? You know, merch. We need to make merch. We're messing with it. Shannon is the more artsy person, so I just need her to do something with... Listen, I need our, our what you call it?
Logo?
Yes, I need that done differently so I can make it better on the shirts. That's what I need.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we can do shirts. We can do hats. We can do lots of things. We're going to probably start with a few just, you know, or if you guys have input on what things you would like to see as merch, that would actually be super fun too. Give us some thoughts because everyone likes different things. Like I'm a bag girl. I love a good tote bag.
Yeah, they
I'm not a hat person, but
the site we're going to be using has so many different things that we can put our logo or different things on. Or if there's like a quote or something we say that you guys are like, hey, I would love to have this on something. Like Leslie messaged me with the Salt Life thing and she's like, now I'm just waiting for your sticker that says Slut Life.
I know. That's so good. I also enjoy the, we're not telling you how to get away with murder.
But we kind of are.
Like, there's so many better ways to do it if you're going to do it. Don't do it. But
exactly. Yeah. But anyways, also, so back to our patrons. So thank you, Luis.
Woo! Luis. I love Luis.
She is a doll. So sweet.
Yeah.
Jillian.
I have to do coffee. Jillian. Yes. I love Jillian. Yay.
Laurel.
Do you like my aunt?
Yes,
I don't know Laurel, but woo!
She's my aunt.
She's aunt lovely.
Supportive. And then we have Jazzy, who came across this recently.
Hey,
so
Jazzy.
She's messaged us on Instagram a few times. And then my friend Rocky.
That's right. So, hey, sorry, Jazzy. I didn't mean to clap. I'm doing my little clap over here.
You did your little clap. I saw it.
Oh, I did. So, okay.
Yes.
Everyone gets a clap.
Thank you guys so much. We appreciate you. We just want you to know that. And obviously all of our listeners, we appreciate all of you. We understand finances aren't always able. So like we've said before, just listening to us, rating, reviewing, or sharing our podcast with friends and family or people you think might be interested, like that helps us a ton because the more listeners we get, the better opportunities we have for getting sponsorships and things like that. And that's money that we're just turning around and putting back into our podcast. So we just appreciate that so much. So don't think that we don't appreciate you.
We love it. Yeah. We love that you listen. And that's all we even wanted to begin with from this whole thing. We wanted at least like a listener that wasn't our moms. So
right.
you know, I think that we've done okay then on that note. I'm glad my mom listens, but I know Same. She doesn't necessarily enjoy the content, but that's fine. to each their own.
You know, my sister actually sent me a Marco Polo this morning. She's at her other job and she was showing me their walk-in freezer to go with Kanika's.
Yeah, that's story. Immediately what I thought of.
Because she was listening to it this morning. She's like, so I just had to show you. This is ours and this is how you do it. And she's like, and then she asked me, she goes, did they not see anyone on camera? And I was like, well, they think it was doctored. Like, who knows? Supposedly no. She's like, okay, fine.
I don't know. I know. That's so trippy. My mom, we talked about it and she's like, I don't remember that. And I was like, that shows the people that are really into the true crime things will remember all of those things. I was like, that's probably why you don't remember, because you didn't, like, not that she doesn't care, but that's not an article she's going to read versus something I would immediately go
especially,
to.
especially with those ones that have so many conspiracy theories behind it. I think those ones, like, even if you're not a true crime person and you're a conspiracy theorist, like, you'll go down that rabbit hole with those cases and stuff too.
Yeah,
just like the Cecil Hotel and stuff. Yes. So
yeah, that was a crazy one. But
yeah. But Shannon, you had some stuff you wanted to talk about before we get started.
Yeah, I just wanted to emphasize again how important mental health is. I know that every case that we talk about generally relates to that in one way or another. And I know we don't always mention it every week, but I think it's just something that should be talked about more. Recently, a classmate of mine from high school took his own life, unfortunately, and it has been a very hard week for the whole community. I mean, even when you're not living there anymore, it really can shatter a community when it's someone everybody knows. And in this case, I wasn't close with him by any means. But he was one of those people, just based on what I did know about him and remember, I mean, from high school, he's not a person that you would ever expect for something like that to happen, which I think makes it that much more important to realize that people are struggling sometimes and you don't even know it, and how important it is to check on those people. And if you yourself are feeling one way or another, to get help if you can, and just know you are loved, whether you have there's nobody in your life or not, there is somebody that loves you. And I think there's, regardless if it's a friend, a coworker, whoever, I mean, I read a quote that said 96% of people that know that someone is suicidal will help them, which that's unfortunate. It's not a higher percentage, but I do think that that is true. Nobody wants anyone to have to struggle. And I mean, and sometimes just being transparent and sharing your own stories are helpful to know. I mean, I didn't struggle with mental health issues until I got older. And I think when I was in college was when I really started having anxiety. And I mean, I finally went to the doctor for it and got help because I knew it was not something that I wanted to live with. And I don't, you know, didn't want to feel that way. And I mean, even over the years, it's not like that was a fix all, but since then I try, you know, to go into the doctor and change my meds as I need to, because you know, they don't work forever. You need to adjust things. And I know, like, this past winter has been really hard on me. And I've been like, just in a very deep, not like depression, but a funk. And I know that that's, you know, everybody struggles with, like, you know, seasonal stuff, not everybody, but I just think, like, this whole thing with losing our friend, it's a wake up call to think just how you can help yourself and others. And so we will include the, you know, hotline information. And I think it's important to know that you can text that hotline. For myself personally, I'm not someone, if I know that I'm feeling away, I'm not going to call someone. But knowing that there's an option to text and chat online, I think is huge, because a lot of people are like, it's hard to take that step. But when you're texting, I know I'm way more likely to text someone than I am to call. So I just think that that's really important that people know that that's out there too. And even if you're not necessarily feeling like you're going to harm, you know, yourself or others, I think sometimes just talking to someone else can help, because it's just, it's really heartbreaking. And it's been a very hard week. Like I said, even not being close to him, I think it just, it's an eye opening that people do struggle even when you don't think that they're the type of person that would be struggling. So I could go on and on about that, but I don't need to go. But I just want everyone to know that we do, both of us try, I mean, to treat, you know, mental health issues on our, of ours by going and getting help.
I think that's something that we've both been pretty open mm-hmm. with on this too. And that's something that it took me a long time. I had a lot of depression in high school and it was mm-hmm. untreated and I didn't talk about it. I, you know, small town, that was a stigma. I already had other issues against me for living in that small town. So I wasn't going to make it harder myself. I'm like, yeah, I really hate life. Mm-hmm. So I just went through it. And it wasn't until I was in my 30s, you know, before I really was like, okay, I can do something about this. I saw a therapist. I got medicated. And well, I got medicated first and then I saw a therapist. But you know, that was something too that, and I won't lie, it was from listening to, which I don't care for them now, they're very problematic, but from listening to My Favorite Murder, because they were so open about theirs, mm-hmm. it made me feel like it was okay for me to go get help. And, you know, that's the same thing. I have a nurse practitioner now who's for my meds and we meet on a regular basis, you know, and we go over it. And during the pandemic, I needed to up my antidepressants. And we recently discovered last fall that they were now too high and making me very tired. I legitimately thought that I was a narcoleptic at this point. Like I was like, the amount of sleep I need and stuff. And I'm on antidepressants. I'm on mm-hmm. anti-anxiety meds that I take daily, twice a day. And I recently discovered that, yep, nope, I still need those because I was out of them for like 4 days. And by the fourth day, I woke up with a panic attack. I was dreaming about it. That's how bad my anxiety is. Mm-hmm. So
I know.
It's just real. No. Yeah. You know, so reach out, find someone who's safe that you can at least, you know, share those feelings with. If you're feeling down, you're not feeling in a great space. Like we're very much about that. Like my brain doesn't like to create the stuff to make me be on an even keel. So I medicate for it so I can feel like a good human being.
Yeah. And even then, that's how I'm like, I know I need to go in and get mine adjusted, because like last week I was like, I have so much anxiety and I can't pinpoint what it is. Cause you know, you'll go through your mind, like, what am I anxious about? Is there something coming up? And sometimes you just, there's nothing. I'm like, I literally have no idea what I'm anxious for.
My body's just like, we're in fight or flight mode for no mm-hmm. apparent reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and that's, nobody should have to live like that. So I think it's just a good reminder. And like I said, we'll put the information and stuff in the
show notes,
and you can always reach out to us if you need someone to talk to, or, you know, we need to help find someone for you to talk to. Like I'm more than willing to help on that end of things.
For sure. But so if you feel like you have no one, you have us.
Yes. We can relate.
Yes. So, but
I mean, other than that, sorry, that was like a lot of heaviness right there, but
I think it's important.
Yeah, it is. So, on that note, I'm assuming there's some mental stuff going on in this next case, because there usually is, but
I don't dive into that yet.
We'll just assume that things probably happen because of things. Well,
when this comes out, it's March 1st. And so we're now in Women's History Month.
Yeah.
And since women are predominantly the victims in our cases, we decided to switch it up. And we're going to share stories of when women were the killers.
Yeah.
And I know we've shared some of those before and stuff too. Like this isn't new either. But again,
it's just a different twist on it.
Women tend to be the victims. So
it's very true. Yes.
Yep. For this first, I was originally going to do this one case, but then it was like in Indiana and I was like, we just did that not too long ago. So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This first episode, I'm going to be taking us to Independence, Missouri.
Missouri. Okay.
And I'm talking about Sharon Kinney.
Okay.
So I don't really remember ever hearing about this case. I looked it up and there was an Unsolved Mystery episode that covered her. It was season 10, episode 6. And it was only like the last few minutes. So like there were three other cases in there. And you can watch that on Amazon Prime. There's also a show called A Crime to Remember that's on ID, mm-hmm. the ID channel. And you can also watch it on Discovery Plus. They cover her in season 4, episode 2, and it's called Luck Be a Lady. I'll be honest, I was going to watch that one. I got a few minutes in and I was like, this seems overly dramatic. And then Karen Kilgariff got interviewed and I was like, I noped right out of there because like I said.
Yeah, of course I was, but yeah.
I'm no longer an MFM stan. So that's mm-hmm. my personal opinion. If you still like them and listen to them, that's cool. You can watch that if you would like. I just decided not to. So I did get a lot of my information from Wikipedia, Murderpedia, and like there was an Unsolved Mysteries article and another one, and those will be linked in the show notes as well. But Sharon Kinney was born November 30th, 1939 in Independence, Missouri to parents Doris and Eugene Hall. And they lived there until she was in junior high, and then they moved to Washington for a few years before ultimately moving back to Independence when she was 15. So it's like, it sounds like they were just gone for a little bit. I don't know why. So then in the summer of 1956, at the age of 16, Sharon met her would-be husband, James Kinney, at a church function. Sounds so wholesome, doesn't it?
Yeah. Very 50s. Yes.
Yes. Except he was a 22-year-old college student.
Oh, robbing the cradle there.
Yeah. Right. Which I'm like, I guess for the times, that's also still fairly common. And also, what church function this was, I'm not sure. James is Mormon. So I don't know if this was a Mormon church function, but that's also kind of on par with certain sects of the Mormon faith. So, I mean, technically, if you're just like, oh, it was only 6 years difference, it's like, okay, that's not bad. Except for when you're like 16 and 22. Right. It's not like she was 22 and he was 28.
Yeah, it's different when you're older and there's a gap, but when you're still considered a child, then it's like, meh.
Yeah. So they dated for the summer and then he went back to school in the fall, which was, I want to say, in like Utah. I think it was a, I'm pretty sure it was Mormon. Like a Mormon, but his parents lived here in Independence.
Oh, got it. Oh, interesting.
So a couple sites mentioned that Sharon really wanted to get away from Independence. And she wrote to James later the fall of 1956, telling him she was pregnant. So they came back and she got married in October of 1956. But like they lied on the marriage certificate and said she was 18 and a widow because she supposedly told people she got married in Washington and he died in a car accident. But it's like you would have been like 13.
Right.
I'm also not sure why they had to lie on the marriage certificate because like wouldn't her parents have just.
Right. If she was that age and lived with her parents, right? Right. But then so they would be aware. I don't know.
I don't know. Like, they don't talk about, like, if her parents were against it or something like that. I don't really know.
Maybe, 50s were different times, so who knows? Right. But that's a weird thing to lie about.
It is. It's also unclear if Sharon was actually pregnant, because shortly after they moved to, like, she moved to Utah with him then so he could finish school, but she had a miscarriage. I don't know. Maybe it was real. Maybe it wasn't. I don't honestly know.
Right.
As we put it, as we learn more about her, I wouldn't necessarily put it past her.
Okay.
But
there's no confirmation.
No, but she does then get pregnant for real and gave birth to their daughter in the fall of 1957.
So how old was she at this point? She was pretty young still, right?
57 and she was born in 39. So she was like 18, probably about 18.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I guess if they got married young, which they did back then.
They did. She was 16. Okay. I mean, yeah. So then they moved back to Independence, Missouri. So much for her getting out of there.
Yeah.
And James is like working overnights as an engineer at some aviation place. And Sharon's just home all day with the baby. And she loves to shop and sleep around.
Sharon.
She spent more money than they had and sleeping around. I'm not exactly sure when. A lot of stuff involving her children was just like very unclear, but mm-hmm. she gets pregnant again, and I'm assuming it's sometime in 1958 or 1959, based on timeline for some stuff coming up. But she had their second child, a boy named Troy. But she was also having a regular affair with an old high school friend named John Boldes. So I'm like, I don't know if we know for sure if this baby is her husband's right. or if it's her lover's.
I don't okay. know. Okay.
Troy's never brought up life. Again, really. Right. Troy's never really brought up again.
Huh.
So by early 1960, James is tired of Sharon's excessive spending and strongly suspects her of infidelity, which I'm like, okay, Independence is a small town.
Oh,
let's face it. This is an openly known secret.
Yeah.
Everyone in town is gossiping about all the men Sharon's sleeping with, or her and John. Like, James is just being willfully ignorant at this point about
Ignorance is bliss, yes.
Mm-hmm. But he's, I guess, getting to the point where he no longer wants to pretend. So he's thinking about divorce, and he must have discussed it with Sharon because he's talking to his parents about how she agreed to it as long as she got to keep the house, custody of their child, or of their daughter. And I'm like, so she didn't want the son?
That's weird.
That's weird. And $1,000 in alimony. And I Googled it. That would be over $10,000 today.
Oh, wow.
So I'm assuming she meant that as just like a lump sum of alimony.
Right. And not paid
and not
out
like a
over...
month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So James talks to his parents on March 18th of 1960 about getting a divorce. And they're very devout Mormons. So they're like, just give it a little bit more. Like, just keep trying a little bit more. Then on March 19th, police get a call from Sharon Kinney. And she states that she was in the bathroom around 5:30 p.m. A couple of things I read said she was, like, putting on makeup. And I'm like, why are you putting on makeup that late?
Yeah.
No one was like, why are you doing that? I guess.
Yeah, no.
James was napping in their bedroom when she hears a gunshot. And she goes running into their room and sees their 2.5-year-old daughter with the gun James had been cleaning earlier. And this was a .22 caliber target gun. And so she saw that he had like a wound in the back of his head and there was blood. And she told police that he often let their daughter play with the gun. And actually friends and family did corroborate this.
Wow. Different times, I guess. Yeah. My gosh.
So police just accepted this as a tragic accident.
Wow.
And in Good case effort. You didn't already guess it, it wasn't. But we'll get back to that. Also, how messed up do you have to be to try to blame your
two-year-old
for that?
Right. She probably thought, well, no one's going to put my kid in jail.
Well,
so.
And if she didn't continue down the path she continued down, she could have gotten away with it. And can you imagine that poor child growing up knowing she had killed her father?
Right.
Or thinking she had killed her father?
Talk about trauma.
Yeah. So she collects his life insurance, which I saw in one spot said $200,000 and another spot said $230,000. I don't know if that was converted into today's money already, but if not, that means she got over $2 million in today's money.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a good motive right there.
Right. Also, you're set. In 1960s, things don't cost shit and you're $2 million?
Right.
So he died in March. A month later, in April, she decides to buy a convertible. You know, so then she starts promptly having an affair with the man who sold it to her.
This Probably.
Is yep. No,
oh.
she did.
Oh,
this
she
This is
did.
Walter okay. Jones. He is married with children. And she I'm wants her. Him to leave his wife for her. Tells him she's pregnant. I don't know why people think this is going to work with someone who already has children. Like, he has children that's having an affair. What makes you think that he's then going to leave his wife and other children to be with
for
you and this
your...
child?
Right.
No, I'm sure it does happen sometimes, but...
Probably not in this case. He probably thought he was having fun.
Right.
She's really not presenting herself as the mourning, grieving wife, widow,
no.
but, you know.
No. So when that backfires, she decides she's going to call his wife Patricia Jones and pretend to be the sister of the woman who's having an affair with her husband. So she gets Patricia to agree to meet up with her. And then when they meet up, like, Patricia had a friend drop her off at this area, and Sharon convinces her to get in her car with her so they can go for a drive and talk about it. Unfortunately, this is the last time that Patricia would be seen alive.
Oh my gosh.
And this is May 26th. Still 1960.
This is only a couple months after, uh-huh. right? Okay. That's uh-huh. what I was like, making sure I'm on the timeline right. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So then, Walter doesn't file a missing report until the next morning, but Patricia obviously doesn't come home that night. I don't get why he didn't call them that night, but whatever, I guess.
Yeah, that's kind of odd in the 50s or 60s, whatever, when yeah. someone doesn't come home.
Especially who's probably a stay-at-home housewife.
Right, and then you have that, I mean, well, her, you know, basically threatening him to leave his wife and...
Well, so people mention seeing her get into a convertible with a woman wearing big sunglasses and a headscarf, and Walter immediately thinks of Sharon and confronts her. And she admits that it was her, but she says she dropped her off close to the house and she saw her talking to a man in a green Ford. And that was the last she saw her.
Mm-hmm.
So now Sharon and her other lover, ex-lover, I don't know, John, the one from before,
the first one, okay.
Troy's dad, who knows, they go out searching for Patricia. And this is the 27th, that marked May 27th. So it's the next day.
Okay.
After having no luck, they decide to go to Lover's Lane because, you know, searching for a missing woman really
gets you real
boiling.
Yeah, I was going to say, gets you real turned on there.
Yeah.
Dead body, huh? Looking for, well, I guess you don't know that she's dead, but.
Well, and then when they're there, they just so happen to stumble across Patricia's body.
Mm-hmm.
So Patricia was found with 4 gunshot wounds.
Jeez.
The killing shot had entered through her mouth in an upward trajectory. Then there was one in her abdomen and one in each shoulder. And it sounds like these were like downward trajectories. So I'm assuming she was already on the ground.
Oh, gosh.
They were also, she was also killed with a .22 caliber gun.
Hmm.
But this gun was never found. And it actually was not the same gun that her husband was killed with. Because the sheriff still had that one.
Hmm.
But Unsolved Mysteries, like when I watched that, they made it sound like it was the same gun.
Yeah. Huh.
So they interviewed Walter and Sharon and John. Oh, and before that, a co-worker of Sharon's does admit to buying her a .22 caliber pistol at her request. Police find the box for it in her house, but they never find it. And she says it vanished. It just got lost.
It just walked off.
Yeah.
Maybe her kid took it too.
Yeah.
Toy box.
So Walter and John gave written and signed statements and even took lie detector tests. And the police believed they were both being truthful. John even admitted to the fact that Sharon had offered him $1,000 to kill her husband, but he thought she was joking. So Sharon, on the other hand, only will give an oral statement. She refuses to sign one and she refuses to take a lie detector test. So at this point, police are sure Sharon killed Patricia and she's arrested on May 31st, which incidentally is the same day that Patricia was buried. Police then also charged her for the murder of her husband at the same time. So she's initially then they were like, hey,
this is a
you killed your husband too.
Mm-hmm.
These two murders happened real close together with the same type of gun.
Yeah. She should have just, I mean, once again, not telling you how to get away with murder, but like, yeah, you could have walked away from that with all that money and been fine.
Yeah.
But you can't, jealousy...
you had all that money. What did you need that other man for?
Right. Ew.
Come on now.
Yeah.
Come on.
He's going to leave you too if he leaves his wife for you. So why?
If just he's cheating on his wife with you, what makes you think he won't cheat
on
you later?
Sounds like a great guy.
You could have been in the clear with some money, just having fun.
With that convertible? I mean,
you
come
got
on
greedy.
Now.
Yeah. You got greedy.
Sure did. You wanted it all.
Yep. So she's initially denied bail, but in July that was overturned due to circumstantial evidence and she was released on a $24,000 bond.
Jeez. Who
which
paid
is,
that?
It sounds like her brother paid one of them. I don't know if he paid this one too. I don't, it was, it just said it was posted. So that's almost $253,000 today.
Hey, Dark Hearts. We wanted to tell you about one of our favorite products that helps keep you safe and also gives you peace of mind.
She's Birdie is a cool little device that is small enough you can hook it on a keychain, bag, or even just carry it.
There are two different types of birdies. The original birdie, when activated, chirps very loud. Trust me, it's ear piercing. We've tried it. And also has an intense strobe light that helps deter attackers and gets the attention of potential bystanders.
The She's Birdie Plus is a Bluetooth-enabled device that connects to an app on your phone that gives you 24/7 support where live reps are available. It can also send you a faint call to get out of an uncomfortable situation, as well as provide GPS location to your chosen contacts. This birdie does require a subscription you can either pay monthly or annually.
The best part is you can get 15% off your order when you use the code DARKHEARTS15.
Check out shesbirdie.com to see what fun colors and patterns you can purchase.
Stay Heartland kind and be extra Darkland wary with your new birdie. And also, I really just hate that bail's even an option for people who are being charged with murder. I think that's ridiculous. Yes, let's let them out in the meantime so they can kill some more people. That sounds like a great idea.
Yeah. Perfect. Okay. So then her trial is delayed because she apparently really was pregnant. She gives birth to a little girl in January of 1961.
Mm. So and whose now, baby? This was, what's his name's? Patricia's husband. Okay.
Yes. Walter. I guess, maybe, who knows?
I guess we don't know, but we're going to assume that based on
most likely, timeline. That's who she was claiming it was. So they have two separate trials, one for Patricia and one for James. So they have the trial for Patricia's murder first, and that's in June of 1961. And at this point, Sharon's kind of a celebrity because of her husband dying and now being involved in this. She's still adamant she had nothing to do with it. And she's a beautiful woman. She is really pretty. She's got that like 1960s movie star kind of look, you know?
Well, and that's a huge like scandal. So of course it's going to be huge. Mm-hmm.
This young, beautiful woman. Because at this time, when her husband was killed, she was only 20.
That's so young. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she already has two kids.
Yes.
At that point.
By 61, then, she has a third.
Gosh.
So, yeah. And she was charming and she knew how to play the jury and the people. So, of course, the jury's all male. And so without having the murder weapon, despite having over 20 witnesses, the jury only deliberated for an hour and a half and acquitted her, saying there were just too many loopholes in the prosecution's theories.
Interesting.
One juror even asked for her autograph afterwards.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So then she So then she has to go back to jail to await trial for her husband. And that started on January 8th of 1962. And it was a first degree murder charge, but prosecution was not seeking the death penalty. And on January 11th of 1962, after 5.5 hours of deliberation, she was found guilty and sentenced to life in prison.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there was a woman on this juror. And eventually, like, she gives an interview saying she's regrets being so excited that there was a woman on there, because I think she feels like it's her fault that she got convicted.
Yeah.
Some jurors later told reporters that there were several votes cast before they all agreed, and they were originally split on whether or not she was guilty. And even James' parents still didn't think she'd done it.
Jeez, how did she have them so brainwashed?
I have no idea.
Especially if he came to them telling them, like, he wanted to get a divorce.
I mean, wanting a divorce is different than feeling like your wife is going to murder you.
I mean, fair. But if you're, like, not that happy, I mean, you'd think you'd put two and two together. But
I mean, whatever.
She must have really been her.
Yep. So it sounds convincing. Like she was, like, given her sentencing in April, but then like they also requested that she be released on bond.
What?
And there was even a petition signed by 132 people who thought she was innocent.
And this was after the guilty charge.
After she had been convicted of first degree murder.
Convicted, yeah. Okay.
So the judge denies it because it's a first degree murder charge.
Good. Okay. Yes, he should.
Then her defense files for the conviction to be vacated, stating that the jury had made the decision based on surmise and speculation as opposed to substantial evidence, that they hadn't taken proper notes, and like they even like questioned her ex-lover John's testimony about her wanting to kill her husband and stuff. So the judge who had presided over this case, he initially denies this. But in March of 1963, the Missouri Supreme Court reversed the conviction and ordered a new trial.
Yeah, interesting.
Yep. So she was initially denied bail again, but that was overturned as well. And she was released on a $25,000 bond again, which again, that's around like $250,000+.
That's crazy.
So her second trial for James' murder began on March 23rd of 1964, but a few days later it ended in a mistrial because one of the prosecuting lawyers had actually been a lawyer for one of the jurors before.
Oh, very interesting.
Yes. So then the third trial begins in June.
Jeez.
But the prosecutor was going to seek the death penalty this time. And so the jurors ended up being deadlocked, resulting in another mistrial. Oh my gosh.
This is insane.
So now we have a fourth trial scheduled for October of 1964. But Sharon's still free on her bond. And apparently there was no stipulation with like the jail and stuff that she could leave the country if she wanted.
Yeah.
However, the company that posted her bond did stipulate that she couldn't leave Missouri without written consent.
Okay, well,
I don't think she got the written consent before she and her new lover, Francis Pulgies, left for Mexico in September.
Oh.
And now if you're like me and you're wondering, where the hell are the kids in all of this? Now, I don't know where they were when she was in jail. I'm assuming because she ends up leaving the kids, I guess, with her father-in-law, former father-in-law. The only place that mentioned this was Murderpedia. Everywhere else was apparently like, fuck the kids. No one really cares what's happening with the kids. And I say that's not true. I want to know where they are in all of this.
I think that's super weird that they just fell off the face of the earth. No.
Yeah. So I'm just going to assume that her former in-laws ended up with custody of all these children who probably only one of them was legitimately their grandchild.
Yeah, that's so true. Sounds like they're good people. I mean, to take them in, but
yeah. So they travel to Mexico and she's pretending to be Francis's wife and using the name Jeanette. And shortly after crossing the border, she buys a .22 pistol because she just doesn't feel safe in a foreign country. And then they register.
She loves her guns, doesn't she?
She does. So they register at the Hotel Gin.
Okay.
So they're there for a few days. And then on September 18th of 1964, Sharon left the hotel without Francis. And it's unclear as to why, like some people think it was to get money or medicine. No one knows. But she ends up meeting a Mexican-born American citizen named Francisco Ordonez. Sorry if I said his name wrong.
You know, sounds good to me.
And ends up going back to his room at the Hotel Lavada. According to Sharon, she went back to his room with him to look at some pictures he had.
Okay.
But he soon made sexual advances and she was forced to shoot him to protect herself.
Oh man, she just keeps getting put in these situations.
She said she fired only to scare him, but ended up hitting him twice in the chest, killing him. And having heard the gunshots, a hotel employee named Enrique Reuda entered the room where she shot at him as well, hitting him in the shoulder. So
he just rolled
he fled, locking her in the room. Also, dude, I would not be running to where I heard said gunshots. I would just be calling the police. So, guess you're brave. Also, do you not think you're still waiting for trial of the shooting death of your husband, and we're going to continue to shoot people?
Yeah, like, wouldn't you be laying low at this point too? I mean,
she killed Patricia like 3 months after her husband was killed.
Well, yeah, and she clearly has the urge to kill, or I mean, you know, because of that alone. Otherwise, she could definitely, that proves right there that it wasn't just like a heat of the moment situation.
Right.
She just wanted that rush.
Yes.
She's so, a sick person.
Mexican police aren't buying this and theorize she went to rob him, and when he refused to give her money, she shot him. So police arrested her, charged her with homicide and assault with a deadly weapon. She maintained her story and said she shot the hotel employee because she thought he was coming to attack her too. However, police found 50 bullets with the gun in her purse.
Yeah. So she was packing.
Yeah. And in the hotel she shared with Francis, they found two more guns and a lot more bullets. So he was arrested as well, originally with no charges, but then he was charged with entering the country illegally and carrying an unlicensed gun. I think she was also charged with robbery too, because then later at their trial, in October of 1964, so they don't waste any time, Frances was cleared of all charges and deported back to America. And Sharon was found guilty. And now a lot of people thought that she would also just be deported and sent back to the States, but they gave her, they sentenced her to 10 years in prison.
In Mexico?
In Mexico.
So, well,
nothing. Yep. So she appealed this, and the three-man Superior Court did overturn the robbery charge. However, they upheld the conviction of homicide and actually lengthened her time to 13 years, saying 10 was too lenient.
Well, yeah, you think? Mm-hmm. In Mexico prison, though? In Mexico? Ooh, no.
So on December 7th of 1969, Sharon wasn't present for the 5 p.m. roll call in jail. Nothing was reported until she failed to show up for the later one that evening. A manhunt was arranged. But by December 18th, the Mexican Secret Service and the Mexico City District Attorney, so they were no longer involved in the search. So they gave up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So they speculate that she bribed a guard. And I guess there had been like an unexpected or an unprecedented like blackout. And they think she escaped then. She bribed a guard to let her escape then. And they believed that she very quickly crossed the border into Guatemala. But she had become so fluent in Spanish because I actually saw something else too. Someone said like they had been arrested for weed in another country and that was like a really strict fine. And so they weren't fluent in it, but they quickly became fluent in the language, having known none, because you're so immersed in it and you have to.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's the best way to learn it, they say.
Yep. So they were like, pretty much she could be in any Spanish speaking country and not...
She could blend in pretty well and
survive. And that's pretty much it. So I think one of the guns they found in the hotel room, they determined was the gun that killed Patricia. But because she'd already been a trial for that, double jeopardy is a thing, she couldn't be tried again. Technically, her case, like, she could still be tried for James's murder, but she's never been found.
So she just dipped out, left her kids first and foremost.
Yes.
I mean, long ago. But
this is a woman who clearly only cares about herself and what she can get out of people.
So, wow. She's still, well, I mean, she very well could be alive still.
I know. I was old. Just calculating how old. She'd be 84.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible. My grandmas are possible. Both older than that in their lives. So, I mean... crazy.
But then talk about, you wonder, like, it's like, how many more people has she shot?
Yeah, it makes you really wonder, because
there's no way she just stopped doing that.
Wow, what a con artist. Like, that's crazy though too. I mean, I feel like
I wonder with all the DNA, like, if her, probably not her kids, but probably her grandkids or great grandkids ever do DNA testing. Because one, I'm also sure that woman had more children.
Oh yeah. I'm sure she did.
So I wonder if someday it'll come about like where she maybe ended up with like an ancestry thing and like people finding long lost like cousins.
That is such a thing too. Like, you know, you think everyone does it and it's like a thing, but when you put it with crime, so many crimes have been discovered because of that.
Right.
Like the show, I think it's called Our Father on Netflix. Remember the one where a doctor was, women were going in to get, why can't I think of, you know what I mean? But anyways, he ended up using
inseminated.
Yeah. And he was using his own sperm and impregnating them. And I mean, there was he had so many different children. They all got linked together.
Yes.
Just insane. And I don't think he even got charged with anything actually either, but
I think he has now.
Has he? Because I remember like watching it. I think they were. It was a hard thing to prove for whatever reason,
or there wasn't something about laws or something. But there is now, because now there's also even with sperm donors. Mm-hmm. There's a whole thing of like now I've seen they're investigating what they call like cluster cells, because you're not supposed to have the same genetic like eggs or sperm used within so close to each other. So these people aren't potentially dating. But they found like these clusters of like
hundreds of kids.
Yikes.
That's insane. Yeah, that would make sense. Space that out a little bit maybe. Wow. But yeah, that's the DNA. That is a good point. That would be really interesting. Imagine like having that done and then finding out you're somehow related to some like serial killer or something. Wouldn't that just be insane? You just don't even know. I mean, even depending on how far back it goes, that's crazy.
Well, at this point, I'm like, is she a serial killer or a spree killer? Because, you know, spree killers are like, I'm like, I feel like it's spaced enough that she would be a serial killer. But that is...
I know. That's a lot of kills in a very short amount of time.
Well, the one was in 64, I guess, because, you know, she had that little thing of being in jail for a bit.
That's true. But if she wasn't in jail, I'm sure she would have probably killed in that time, too.
Right.
She got a little trigger happy.
What happened to all that money? You got so much money. If you would have just, again, you got too greedy.
Right. She should have just went to Guatemala right away or whatever. Take that money and run, sister.
Why didn't you just leave your two kids at the time with your in-laws?
Right.
And take off. Like, I'm not saying that's okay, but it's definitely better than murdering people.
I agree.
And, which you'd already murdered one, but you would have gotten away with it.
Yeah, like you're not very smart, you know. She probably was like, the thrill of it getting away with it made her want to do it again. And poor Patricia, like, had nothing to do with any of that, you know. Like, she's just being a mom and a wife, and her husband's being a piece of shit.
I hope he feels guilty for...
Yeah, she should have killed him instead. Sorry. I mean, I don't mean, don't kill anyone. But in that situation, poor Patricia was... so just innocent to that whole situation.
It's a victim on so many levels.
Yeah, that's sick. That is sick. Wow, that's crazy.
So, yeah.
What was her name again?
Sharon Kinney.
Kinney. Okay.
K-I-N-N-E.
Oh, that's interesting. I love a good, like, woman killer. Not that that's okay that she killed people, but I like stories like that because you don't hear them that much. So
no, I was trying to find like a vigilante woman killer type thing. I'm still gonna look for that for this month because I can get behind those a lot more.
I agree.
You know what I mean?
Like, oh yeah,
that's even like, and I'm not condoning it, but I also what's her face, Charlize Theron played her in Monster.
Eileen Wuornos.
Yes. Like, she had a shit life. And I'm
condoning.
Like, some of the people she murdered were probably abusive Johns or whatever, you know? But then there was some, I'm like, okay, like.
It just got a little out of control.
Yeah. I was like, I could have supported you.
Yeah. If you would have stopped a little bit sooner, maybe.
But when you kill the innocent old man who's like driving you home, you're like just trying to be nice. Like,
no. I know. She's really one of the only, like, big female serial killers that I think everybody's at least heard of, because you don't hear about them often.
Well, and like I said, there was one I was gonna cover, now I can't think of her name off the top of my head, but she was from Indiana, and she's some things called her the first female serial killer in America. But I don't think that's accurate, because then I saw someone else who was, but it was just an interesting, I wonder if I saw my notebook in here that I had her name written down, because I still thought about it, but I don't know. Like, I don't. I'll have to think about it. Bertha, I think her name was Bertha or something like that.
Huh.
But You're reading it, but that was like 1800s, you know?
Yeah, and way back where you're not quite sure.
She was obsessed with being by people's like bedsides as they died. And so it turns out she was poisoning a lot of people to make them die.
So there's this book, not since we talk about books. I read it, I don't know, probably a year ago. It's called The Lost Apothecary. And it's a
I have that one. I just haven't read it.
It's pretty good. Like, I kind of had higher hopes for it, but the whole premise is, you know, back in the 1800s, 1600s, even maybe, I don't know. This is kind of on the same page there, because women are buying these different things to kill their husbands who are, you know, either abusing them or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So that's the whole premise of the story from back then. And it's good.
I think I saw there's a true story of women who would do that in like Europe and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Easy to hide that, because they would just put it in their food like a spice and like they didn't have the technology to find that.
But I do have that one. I think I kind of started reading it and I just wasn't in the mind frame to read it. That's like the Daughters of Issachar.
I struggled getting into it because it wasn't like a lot of the books I had been reading at that time. Yeah. I really liked the cover. I do judge a book by its cover because it's very 1,000% beautiful cover.
I do too. It is a beautiful color because that's the one where it goes back and forth to present day and the past.
And that's where it's like, it took me a while to get through it. But once I was done, I was like, that was a good read. I mean, I didn't love it, but it was interesting.
I have so many books currently that I'm...
I know. I have a shelf of like to be read books. I finally like sorted out what ones I haven't read.
One whole bookshelf is just to be read books.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no.
And I ordered more from Book Outlet last night because their fiction books are on sale for $6.99.
That's the one you sent me, right? Yeah. Yes. I have like 20 books in my cart. Thanks, Kathy.
I started with like 20. Uh-huh. I did narrow it down to just 6. Some of them that I like really wanted, I looked first to see if they were in the Libby app.
Oh, yeah.
That I could check out later. And if they were, I removed them. So good. I was good.
You were a good girl there. It's hard though, because
When they're that cheap and they're hardcovers and paperbacks.
I know. That's insane. I'm like, I feel like I have to buy them just because of that. I'm like, I would pay significantly more.
This isn't a sponsor, but I'll put it in the products mentioned too, you guys. I'll put Book Outlet link.
You guys, it's great. And it's all like, they're new books too. It's not even like they're just really old.
It's not like a thrift book. And also, if you pay attention, because like right now they have their fiction sale, but they'll also at times, I've gotten hardcover books for like $4.
That's awesome.
And it's just it's like overstock for books. Any stores and websites that have had too many and they're just not selling as much, they get them. So like, if it's like a new release, don't expect it on there right away, maybe in a few months. But I love that site. And it takes a little bit. It takes like a week or two for shipping. Yeah. But I'm sorry for the price. I just don't care.
No, that's worth it. And it's free shipping if you spend over $35, everybody.
Which is easy to do.
Yeah,
and
that's like
you
three
get
books.
So many.
More than that right now with the sale.
I was going to say, even when they're not on sale, you can still get like 5 books for that. I think one time when I first found them, they had a massive sale going on and I got like 12 books for $40.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's.
And I feel like they almost always have some sort of sale going on. So
it's worth it.
Book Outlet needs to sponsor us.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That'd be amazing.
That would be so cool.
Because we love a good book.
I did just finish last week. So I'm still reading Stephen King's Insomnia, which is good. I like it, but it's massive. And so I have ADD.
Any of his books, I feel like that's a huge commitment.
Right. So I have ADD. I have to take breaks. So I read The Very Secret Society of Irregular Witches by Sangu Mandana.
Okay.
It was adorable. The cutest little rom-com-y type thing.
I love those.
It was so cute. I highly recommend. Loved it. Present day, kind of like England, English countryside, which is... It's adorable. A lovers to enemy or enemy to lovers type thing, but PG, except for one scene gets real spicy. But
well, that's how all of Colleen Hoover's books are. Very spicy. I have to laugh because I let one of my friends borrow, or I've been giving her a few of those books at a time to read. And her husband the other day said, thanks for giving my wife all the porn books. was like, you're welcome.
We were talking about books the other day at work, and actually we were discussing spicy books. And in high school, one of my mom's friends gave me like a garbage bag full of like bodice terror, you know, tearing, yes, like romance novels. Gosh, the ones that are like with Fabio on them.
And oh my gosh. They're like, hardcore. So, like those are legit.
Could have been running a ring. I was passing out books to other girls in high school to read and like circulating these porno books because let's face it, girls,
when you're that age, yeah, you know, that's funny.
But we're not going to go on the sites and the magazines. We want to pretend like there's story and plot to it. I had so many of them. I'm like, charging like a quarter to rent these things out, I would have made bank.
Oh yeah. And back then that's like stuff that nobody could just like go buy, you know, without
especially because I was in a small, you know, farmer town.
Yeah. That's funny.
I had the supply of all the novels. Check out Colleen Hoover.
No, hers isn't. Like, some are way more than others, but like, and there's not all of them are like that, which I just read a book by her called Layla. And everybody I know that's read it was like, okay, I loved it personally. You would actually probably like it.
Yeah, because you said it had a paranormal aspect to it, didn't
you? Yeah, which was kind of weird, but kind of cool. Like, I liked it because of that. I think for people who aren't into anything like that, I could see why they thought it was bizarre. I loved it. I mean, it wasn't my favorite by her, but it was, yeah, I went into it thinking like, this is going to be stupid because everybody I know doesn't like it. Nah, I liked it. So yeah. I read that one, and I read Reckless Girls by Rachel Hawkins, I believe. Okay. And
well, and that's why I sent you that link, because there's so many of those types of things, which I will say they do have two Colleen Hoover books on Book Outlet right now. They have All Your Perfects and Verity.
And I've read both of those. Verity is the one that you need to borrow from me though. That one's good. That one's insane. But yeah, I got Reckless Girls. Yeah, that's the one. That one's like a thriller.
Okay, but that's on here too.
I know. I saw that one. I was like, of course, because I had just, you know, bought it for.
They have The Wife Upstairs too by her. If you have
that one, I have that one too, and I just read that one. That one's good, though. That one's good. Yeah. Okay.
I was gonna say. So I know, like Karen Slaughter. So like all those things. I was gonna put a bunch of them because like I had like Wrong Place, Wrong Time in there by Jillian.
I have that in there. Because that one's like $20 at Target. I saw that the other day. So
did you see Hidden Pictures is only $6.99 for the hardcover?
Yep.
Which is how I bought it. How I got it. I bought it is from here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, funny. Because that's a lot at Target. But
yes, it is.
That's why I was like, no, I cannot make myself spend that much on a book right now. But yeah, that's what I've watched. That's what I've read. I haven't really watched much because I've just had a lot kind of going on. But
I did finally. So last week I'm caught up on Shrinking. I still need to watch this week's episode of
The Last of Us. Same. I have not watched that yet either.
I did start Ted Lasso finally on Apple TV.
Yeah.
I've only watched the first two episodes. I like it.
It's okay. I don't love it, but I've watched a few of them. I think if I kept going, I probably would, but
season three is apparently about to start. So I'm getting in there. Just started it. So
yeah. Well,
but otherwise, yeah. Still I'm about finished listening to Blood Like Magic. Which is really good. Enjoy that one a lot. And like I said, I'm still reading Stephen King. I think I'm about to read Heart-Shaped Box because I got that. I had it on hold from Libby.
Mm-hmm.
And it came up. So I was like, oop, I need to grab this. And I'm going to read this before. But it's another one of those like thriller.
Oh, yeah. Books. Good stuff.
So it's by, who's it by again? But I heard good things about this one. So I was like, okay, by William Morrow.
Huh.
So, or Joe Hill. It's by Joe Hill. So.
Okay. Yeah. Wow.
It's supposed to, sooner or later, the dead catch up is the little tagline on the beginning. Okay. Real quick. One last thing. Speaking of books, when I was looking in Book Outlet, I came across a book that had a dog on it. And I was like, is this the dog's point of view? It's a cozy mystery series from the dog's point of view.
Oh my gosh. Adult or what? No.
It's still adults.
Yeah, find that and send that to me.
I am the first book isn't on there, but I did find it on Amazon.
That will I be amazing. Getting
it? The first book is called Doggone It, A Chet and Bernie Mystery.
Oh my god, this is so Chet's cute.
The dog.
Okay.
It has great reviews. It's number 2 in the Animal Cozy Mysteries, which I didn't even know was a thing.
I didn't even know that's a category. That's hilarious.
So I'm about to get this one.
Animal All of the what? Books
in it.
What is it called? Yep. Animal what?
Animal Cozy Mysteries.
Cozy Mysteries. Okay. Yes. That's
okay, but listen to hilarious. These. Listen to these titles. Thereby Hangs a Tale, To Fetch a Thief, The Dog Who Knew Too Much, A Fistful of Collars.
That's so
the
cute.
The Sound and the Furry.
I would read it based on just the titles alone.
Paw that's and adorable. Order, Sense and Sensibility,
no.
Heart of Barkness, Of oh Mutts gosh. And Men, Tender is the Bite, It's a Wonderful Wolf. Oh, this is the one. Back to Bark to the Future, A Chet and Bernie Mystery. That was the one Spencer that I came
Quinn.
Across.
That's the, right? The author, Spencer Quinn?
Yes.
Okay, yep. I found that.
Uh-huh.
And it says it's New York Times bestseller, which I also have to laugh because is there any book that's not on that list?
Right.
Every book you buy says right. that. I'm like, how much do they pay to get that printed on their book?
I know. But I was like, fine. I have to give this one a shot. Like,
that's
this
so cute.
Is too cute.
Yep. I'll be adding that to my cart. Oh my gosh, so cute.
But
yeah, that's yeah. all. I haven't done anything else exciting. It's just been, you know.
No, this weather has been back that's and it. Forth. So yeah, you guys, let us know what you're reading or watching or listening to. You can email us at heartlandperioddarklandpodcast@gmail.com. You can get a hold of us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or the TikTok, like all the things.
Mm-hmm.
So until next time, stay Heartland kind.
But Darkland wary.